Around the NFL Podcast. Is anyone still out there?
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a virtual room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, what is up, boys?
It's happening. Big week. Week two of training cramp. Let's go.
Training cramp. A lot of guys are going to get cramps. Who, you know, these guys going to be in shape? I don't know. We've touched on it on this show that you got to be a little bit worried about guys being able to stay healthy once this thing kicks off. And again, MLB is the guinea pig. And I feel like half of the premier starters in the league have elbow or shoulder injuries right now.
Right.
These athletes are like so finely tuned and they run on a schedule. We take them off the schedule and then we're going to be ramping them up to full speed. Just another challenge facing us.
I think they're in incredible, like, in the mirror shape. Like, there hasn't been much else to do, and so they've been working out at home or in the gym or whatever. But people, you know, football players and coaches love to talk about the difference between being like in shape and football shape. And the only recipe for football shape is to put on those pads and hit. That's what I say when I play football.
Well, yes, you do. I mean, I feel like if anything, like the low bar was set on how I treated my body during the last 5+ months. These guys, you saw them, they're all over the place. They're just in unusual areas exercising, though. These strange, like, abandoned high schools, lawns here and there. So I don't know. It just doesn't seem the same to me. But this isn't 1971 where a dude rolls in 27 pounds overweight with, like, you know, drinking, you know, with beer cans rattling in the backseat of his car.
Marquise Brown added 23 pounds this offseason. I mean, that's a lot on a 157-pound frame he played.
I don't know. Greg,
year.
You
that's
and I are
number.
We're not big guys. Like, what would it take for us to add 20? It's not 23 pounds of, like, muscle or stomach flab. It's like muscle. That's not easy to do on his body shape. I'd like to initiate an investigation on how that
I'm sure occurred. It's going to go great. I'm sure it's
you know
go
even
really
though he's
really
like
well.
A smaller yeah. football player, you know, compared to others, his body shape is in no way similar, even at 157 pounds.
Well, that's true.
Compared to mine. I'm not talking about you.
No, it is. It couldn't be more dissimilar than my body at this point. So,
your body looks good, Mark. Today's
well, you
show is a good
see
one,
it, but yeah.
No, I can see it. I can see it. It looks like the shoulder's a little more definition than even a couple months ago. So I see you're working at it, and I respect you for it.
Well, thank you.
He's scaring that. He's scaring that landscaper in the backyard with all the workouts he's doing.
I haven't had. In fact, he an update. This is the day, a Wednesday, that he should be returning to. You know, he's you know does a great job and he's paid well. He just didn't return. So.
Hmm. Are you gonna
you
exchange
developing
numbers
news?
With them?
I don't know if that triggered developing slash breaking.
Because you're
moving.
Are you gonna continue the relationship after you leave?
No,
or
no. Two ships passing in the western Los Angeles night.
Interesting. All right, coming up on today's show, Nate Tice, son of former Vikings head coach Mike Tice, a former quarterback in his own right, and he does really nice work in the tape study game. We're gonna speak with Nate about some of the quarterbacks in our league, focusing on the 2019 draft class and another notable veteran that we'll get to. So looking forward to that conversation. But before we do that, we hit the news.
Mr. Unlimited.
Let's stick a pin in that. I want to save that for a little later in the news.
Okay.
Just stick a pin in that. Let's start, Mr. Unlimited, with the much scrutinized opt-out deadline. We know that many players, dozens of players across the NFL, have decided to opt out of the 2020 season because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And the NFL had come under fire. Devin McCourty of the Patriots, namely. The NFL trying to move up the deadline, and McCourty had stated, hey, that puts players in a bad situation. Well, we have a little more clarity on that now. The deadline for NFL players to opt out of the 2020 season will be Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, the league said in a letter to the NFL players' Association, the union agreed to shorten the window between the finalizing of the agreement and the opt-out deadline, which was supposed to be originally 7 days. But there's an exchange, some concessions on the, in the final language to make both sides happy. So Thursday is the deadline.
We'll see if there's like a deluge of players. I know some are still considering it, and we're seeing, you know, a handful of opt-outs every day at least. We're over 50. You know, it hasn't been – I don't know if it's been more or less than people expected, but I think it's a reminder to a lot of people. There's more than 2,300 players in the league right now, you know, when the off-season rosters are so big. So like the percentage of players opting out or the percentage of players, you know, testing positive or going on to the COVID list, you know, has been it feels like it's a lot, but then you look at the numbers and it's less than 2% of the entire league. Tre'Davious White, the Bills cornerback, said he was, you know, going up to the deadline of trying to decide whether he'll opt out or not. That, you know, we'll know by the time some of you hear this, so we don't need to get too deep into that. It'll be out of date. But that shows you some big time players, at least one we know, is considering all his options, and it's got to be difficult for players, because the X factor no one's talking about is like, well, you can make your teams are spending millions of dollars making the places as safe as possible, but you still have to play football in the end, and that's the unsafe part of it. You know, that's where you're rubbing up against another body for hours on end, and that's not going to happen in practice for a few more weeks, and obviously in the season for what, 6 more weeks.
Yeah, I think like there's a reason when you look at the percentages, like you mentioned, to be as optimistic as we've been able to be up to this point, that it's not going to snowball and take out 50% of players. It's low. But at the same time, I mean, I would like to see players have a chance to engage in, you know, physical activity the way that real football is going to be, and see what that does to coronavirus before some of these players have to make their decision. I mean, there are future chances for opt out if a player were diagnosed out of nowhere to have to be a high risk corona candidate, or if that happened to one of their family members or they went into the hospital. I mean, there can be additional opt outs, but that's much murkier. And I don't know. I just think that in a way, the deadline to me feels a little bit unfair for a decision that circulates through your whole family. It's not an isolated decision you're making on your own as a player.
It's a credit to the players for getting it in the first place, because in theory, the NFL didn't have to do anything. The CBA was signed. Now, this is unforeseen circumstances, but I appreciate, actually, there has at least so far been some meeting in the middle between the two sides that it hasn't been too rancorous, and the players got pretty much what they wanted in terms of these opt-outs.
A couple other notable opt-outs since the last time we spoke with you on Monday. Marcus Gilbert, right tackle, Arizona Cardinals. He figured to be in the mix for a job there this year. He decides to opt out. He had been on the active NFI list with an illness, so unclear if that's directly COVID-related, but he opts out. And also wide receiver of the Miami Dolphins, Albert Wilson. He is the second Dolphins wideout to opt out. Allen Hurns did so last week. Wilson also appeared to be in line for a nice role in the Dolphins offense. No more. We will not see him again until 2021 at the earliest.
They also have Preston Wilson, who is kind of under the radar as an undrafted guy who was incredible last year, was one of the best rookie receivers in a great rookie class early on until he tore his ACL. I really loved watching this guy play as a deep threat. And so he's still on the PUP list, so he's coming off an injury. And, man, I don't know. You got Chan Gailey, and you got Fitzpatrick, and you got, you know, Tua. But I don't know, that collection of weapons, you're asking a lot for Fitz or for Tua to really survive in a brand new offensive line. This doesn't make it any easier. These weren't key players for them, but it is just not a deep or particularly talented looking offense.
Right, and if you were to take away or look past Devontae Parker's lone breakout season, I mean, that it would be a very concerning. It's what we talked about. Like, if a position group loses 2 to 3 people because of this, in the NFL, the depth is just not there. And so I think it's concerning. It probably slows Tua's entry into the starting lineup, maybe. I don't know. I mean, they had 8 players catch over 20 passes last year. I mean, they have guys they can spread it around to. But this is, it's just like a worst-case scenario for a young quarterback where you're losing 2 productive wideouts.
Good news in Lions land. Matthew Stafford, who had tested positive for the COVID-19 and was put on the list this weekend. He is now off the list because the Detroit Lions announced Tuesday that the quarterback had a false positive test. So good news there for Stafford. He doesn't have COVID-19. Yeah, buddy. Congratulations.
You know, his wife was really upset. She's had some, you know, negative reactions from some creeps who have seen her family in public, you know, since they found out that they were false positives and have, you know, given her
wait, grief. Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's rough.
Called it a nightmare.
Are you serious?
And she was angry with the NFL.
Oh, no.
She was angry with the NFL. And I think there is something maybe the NFL can learn from this and the Gardner Minshew situation, which is, you know, do you have to announce it right away? I don't know. Maybe there is a way that's like, let's make sure we know whether he's really got it or not, because that it created this whole news cycle with Stafford and Minshew where it turned out that they both ended up testing, you know, negative and created a lot of anxiety, you know, and you're going to have that anxiety for the players behind the scenes. You know, when you get the false positive, and that's natural. False positives are going to happen. This is what testing is. Like, this is science. But maybe you don't have to, like, put them on the list right away. I don't know if there's some in-between that they could pull off.
Right, because this is happening because the way the NFL works, the transaction wire is something that's updated regularly. So that begins the news cycle. But I agree with you, especially when there's not really a lot going on right now.
There's nothing going on right now.
And there's not a lot of access to the teams for reporters. So if a guy's not at the team facility for a couple days, it's not like anybody would know either way. That seems like a pretty easy fix just to kind of give it a little bit of a buffer period.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it shows, you know, mentioning Kelly Stafford, who they've been through a ton as a family in the last year. And she talked about the schools basically saying no to your kids. Like, they reached out to the Staffords, according to her report. And that she went to the grocery store and was approached by someone saying... Again, this was after they knew that everything was negative.
Right, but it wasn't public.
Right, it wasn't public, but they walked into a grocery store and were approached by someone saying that you're endangering others. So it's just this, like, it's not just the player. We focus on the player, but there's so many other limbs and elements to this that make it, like, the release of information, I think you're right, needs to be pristine before we throw people into the chaos here.
Gonna need that rapid testing in the season too for situations like this. You know, if this happened on a Saturday, you know, that's gonna be problematic.
Right.
All right, let's talk about this Russell Wilson video that went viral on Tuesday. I don't know, it doesn't even need a setup. Erica, just play it for us, okay?
Hey guys, Russell here. Yes, the typical boring, yes, Russell, the robot Russell, the one you guys love to know. Real exciting. You know, I'm real exciting. But anyway, everybody has to have an alter ego, right? And I've been thinking about what my alter ego would be, and I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you gotta be unlimited. You know, you gotta have a thought process of being unlimited. So when people ask you, you know, what you're thinking about or what you wanna do in life or where you wanna go, you gotta be unlimited. Tell them, I'm unlimited. You know what I mean? So when they ask you certain questions like,
who brings you motivation, Russell?
Mr. Unlimited.
Who's your role model, Russell?
Unlimited.
What is your go-to person for advice, Russell?
They think Pete Carroll. They think this person. Think that person. Love you, Pete. But it's Mr. Unlimited. Tell him.
You know, we've heard for years that Wilson, for whatever reason, and we've heard different reasons, is not a guy that's necessarily universally embraced in the locker room. And I guess I'm specifically referring to the great Seahawks teams of yore, the Legion of Boom teams, that he wasn't always a great locker room fit. And you know what? Again, Russell Wilson does not seem like a bad guy, but he seems like, you know, so cheesy. He's just so cheesy. You can't even, like, it makes you cringe listening. I struggled to get through.
Of course. You mentioned how you enjoyed the beginning, and I only listened to it once because I couldn't do it twice. And you're right, actually, that the beginning was a little bit more of a window into his soul. It reminded me of
he's searching.
Sometimes when you try to, like, when you do my voice of what you think I'm in your head or whatever, saying to you what I'm thinking. Like, that was it. He was inside his own head thinking of what we think about him. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm real exciting. You think I'm the real exciting Russell. I don't know. Apparently, this video is 2 years old. We didn't know that at the time. I don't know why it's being surfaced now. Who cares? He's the one who pressed play, and then he chose to send it out. So
yeah, it may be 2 years old, but I don't think there's a whole totally different Russell Wilson at play right now. It is the unfriendly mixing of athletes who lean heavily on motivational internal levers that they can see the world differently, and extremely cynical journalists who are just not going to sign up for that. I don't picture Dan in his room with headphones on listening to, like, Dan's like Mr. Invincible. Dan, I mean, maybe. I don't know.
But I don't understand.
Maybe we're getting close. I don't know.
The logic fell apart because Russell said he goes to Mr. Unlimited for advice. So that's confusing.
Who does he go to for advice?
He goes to Mr. Unlimited.
I think I would say this. There's probably
his alter ego.
There's a heavy spiritual element to this, which it sounds pulled partially from like a daily devotional type thing that a lot of athletes do too. Again, not your average journalist is digging into that world. So I just think he's not going to fare well with the blogger / podcaster type for the most part.
That was a sneaky flex by Sessler there too. He's like, you know, not your average journalist is going to know the kind of story behind this, but
I don't know what it is.
I'm not your average journalist.
I thought it was as clunky as the next guy, but I also just think that whatever, if you're a Seahawks fan, if that's what your quarterback needs to play that way,
it's
I sign my quarterback
just,
up
we're
for
not
it
that
too.
Cynical. We're just, you know, it's
oh,
just
you're
good,
not cynical.
It's just good.
I mean,
for
I'm
some
as
jokes.
Cynical as
we,
you guys.
We're
please.
Good for jokes. It's a good source for jokes. Look, Erica and I have experience rooting on a Hall of Fame quarterback who sometimes does some like cringy social media or public things. It's, you know, when you're the fan, you're like, you're always defending him and you don't really care because as long as it's still Russell Wilson on the field, we'll take it all. Give me a break.
Man, it is a small price to pay for having one of the great quarterbacks of the last 50 years on your roster.
Exactly.
So I did like your tweet, Greg, last night that Geno Smith is looking better and better.
Oh yeah,
on the bench.
Oh man,
you know, people used to say it's like, oh, he's a problem in the locker room. I don't know. Geno might have the support of the locker room. You might want to. I mean, at
you
some
might
point,
get what you wish
at
for
some
you,
point,
Greg.
I think Seahawks fans have to look at, like, is this worth it? Is it a distraction? You know, is this going to fly in the locker room? And then who else is there? Who else could be taken over? Geno Smith.
Maybe trade him to the Patriots for a third round pick. Get
sure,
rid of that distraction.
Russell
Wilson. All right. And finally, and this is an update I never wanted to have happen, but here we are.
And now, another edition of Keeping Up with Bowen.
The news from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. Moritz Boehringer, the former Vikings draft pick, the first foreign-born player to get drafted into the NFL without even playing a college snap, has come to the end of the road with the Cincinnati Bengals and maybe American professional football. Pelissero reports that Cincinnati has cut the tight end turned wide receiver. And obviously, Mark, this is sobering. And 2020 has been a tough year, and it's not getting easier right now because Mobo needs a job.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I know you've had your own ups and downs during this whole corona stretch, and this was not the news that you needed. I mean, from a flip side, he's a friend of the show. He doesn't know that he is. But I think that any of us, if you were in a job for 4+ years and largely invisible in terms of your productivity, you'd probably be thinking they might move on from you at some point too. I don't wish it on him, but he's had a long, soft period here to prove that he belongs. Tell me if you think he does, and I'm being too harsh on him.
Well, he doesn't know he's a friend of the show, but he is a friend of a friend of the show. Handsome
Yes,
Hank.
Yes, he is.
Henry
yeah,
Hodgson.
He is. So
and it's funny, we basically did this same you know, routine like a year or two ago when he got cut somewhere else and we thought it was the end. So so Dan's tried to dig dirt on Mobo a few times and he has his fun, and we know Henry doesn't like
I
it, and maybe it's not over, maybe another team picks him up, then we're gonna do this whole
is Dan kicking dirt
bit.
I Dan, I never saw it as that.
I never saw it as kicking dirt. I was following the man's career. He was a unique case study in the history of our league. And I, as luck would have it, had a nice dinner last night with Handsome Hank in Playa del Rey here in Southern California. And he was a little upset when I said, listen, I've got to do one last update. Because he was invested.
He doesn't take well to it. He doesn't seem to like it.
He's the vice president of international for NFL. So he helped Mobo make it.
He helped this career happen. I mean, that's being real. He was part of the process of the international player pathway and movement and everything that Mobo ended up representing. So it's like it's like losing a son.
Yeah, you know? I would say here's the acid test. Mike Mayock on that, you know, infamous draft day called up Mike Zimmer and said, take a shot on this guy, Mo B. Now Mike Mayock is in perfect position to say, you know what?
I believe,
could add him to the Raiders and see how he does in, you know, Las Vegas. Mo seems like an interesting guy to throw into the Las Vegas milieu.
Go take your flyer.
Do it.
The pathway program.
He's free.
At the very least, you have the pathway program that allows you to kind of stash them and develop them. We've been doing this for some time. At a certain point, the scholarship has to wrap up, but I hope he gets one more chance.
I mean, there's no other podcast out there devoting 4 minutes to Moritz Boehringer in the year 2020.
Right.
August.
They've got the stash part. They're
all there for when it's a big shiny story on draft day. We stay there.
And that's what Henry never understood, that this was always a passion project for this podcast. And I hope this passion project has not come to a conclusion.
Yeah,
well, he opened the door too. There's been F.A. Abada.
I tried to get out of it here.
You know, he opened the door. There's more, you know, there's successful, more, you know, active players who's come through the program since.
Henry should appreciate, too, that if we're going to follow a player as completist the way that we have with Mo B, it's not all sunshine. I mean, you got to go down the dark alleys and be there with him for that, too. So Henry needs to understand that from a PR angle. We're not a PR firm. We're going to call things the way that
we're a news agency.
I will never be having dinner with Henry after this comment, probably. But
and F.A. is a success story of the highest magnitude. In fact, over dinner last night, Henry reminded me, we were at, of course, the Panthers Buccaneers game last year at the Big Tot. And after the game, Henry found F.A. crying, tears of joy, because he had played in front of his home country, in front of 75,000 people. The Pathways program, the international expansion of the NFL, all beautiful things. And Mobo, we believe in you. Ricky?
And that was another edition of Keeping Up with Bowen.
That's what's happening in the news. All right. As promised, Nate Tice jumps onto the podcast at a very strange time.
Perfect time. Yeah.
Moritz Boehringer update.
I know. That was
the
great end
of his run with the Bengals. Yes. What's up, Nate? Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast.
I appreciate you having me on. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well.
Or something like that. Like, I have to enter in with like a Tiffany song playing from the mall. Is that what we're doing?
Maybe.
It's a possibility. We might
struggle to get Tiffany cleared, but maybe something that sounds like Tiffany would be effective.
Tiffany like product.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. As we said at the top of the show, Nate describes himself on Twitter at Nate_Tice as a life journeyman. And he's all about that Randy ratio for life. What is the Randy ratio?
You know, in typical my dad fashion, you know, he always has great ideas. He just doesn't know how to sell them. So, you know, he had a great thought, like get the ball to the best player on the team, Randy Moss. If we do this, we're going to win the game. It was almost like the running back carries stat that we've now realized is kind of but he, on his opening press conference, decided to tell the rest of the league what his plan was. Let's give Randy Moss the ball 40% of the time. So he came up with a clever name for it.
He called it the Randy Ratio.
Randy Ratio.
And that became one of many plot lines. Your dad really provided more. I was at Pro Football Talk for part of it. I mean, he provided more content than just about any coach in that
era. He just can't help himself. And it's just, it is. Yeah, exactly. No, and I know he was excited. He probably came up with that name in like a little think tank. I've never actually realized who came up with that name, but I was with the rest of the world during that press conference. But I understood the why he was doing it, but maybe how he approached the idea might have been a little iffy.
I'm sure he took out the pencil from behind the ear and jotted it down as soon as he came up with Randy Ratio. He's like, oh, yeah, that's a winner.
Mine's mechanical. So I realized that I've become my dad is that I nod my cheek. If you ever look at his old pictures, I go, yes. Mm. So if you'll see pictures of him, he'll be sitting there just like nodding at his cheek. And I'm like, I'm not like my dad. And then my aunt sent me a picture side by side of us. And I was just like, oh, yeah, this is good. This is good. Love this. Let's just hope the weight gain stays off.
All right. So Nate, you're really you know the game. You understand the game. Obviously, you come from a coaching family. You played the game, and you're really good at breaking down tape. And we thought it would be fun to talk to you about some of the 2019 guys from last year. But I wanted to start with a veteran and start with Derek Carr, okay. Who this is an important year, obviously, for Carr. I think you have some thoughts about him entering this season that we're interested to hear on the show. But I also want to play something that went down just yesterday in a Zoom meeting or a Zoom press conference between Carr and Raiders reporters. Here's what Carr had to say about the idea of playing this season or opting out.
I have a lot to prove to myself. I have a lot to prove to my organization. I'm going to be completely honest here. I'm tired of being disrespected. So there was no question I was going to play this year.
Well, you know, most athletes, they're going to always find something to motivate them. I don't know if you can say it every year that you're being disrespected. You know, if you say
he's
it every
done it
season,
before. Right? You used to be an offensive coach for the Raiders in Derek's career. So you watched him. So was he a guy that, you know, he noticed people talking? I mean, he could be talking about his owner or his coach. They kind of disrespected him. Mark Davis essentially said publicly, I'd rather have Tom Brady.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's like a lot of these athletes, they look for any motivation they can get, you know, when you're already paid here. So the first, I feel like being around Derek, that first goal, and I think a lot of players' goals, and I'm just going to be blunt about it, to get that second contract, get off the rookie deal and get paid. I mean, really. And I think that's what a lot of his motivation early on, not just that, he wanted to win MVP. He wanted those things. And I think now he was like, oh, that's not good enough. So his motivation has maybe changed. And it's now it's, oh, I'm being disrespected. I did all that. But it's also one of those things is you got, what have you done for me lately? I mean, it's the ultimate league in that. So it's, you know, it's his way of finding motivation, but you also have to prove it. So I'm trying not to like disavow or go against what Derek is saying, but you kind of have to prove it.
Well, right? We're putting you in a tough spot here. You're talking. Right off the bat, we're talking about a guy who, who's blocked Dan and I on Twitter in the past, famously. We had to bring him on our show for his brother.
Well, no, David, his brother, had to broker a piece with Derek on our show to get Greg and I unblocked. So
very murky.
It could be dicey sometimes to talk criticism, positive or negative.
He does seem like a guy who hears the criticism a little bit. I think that's fair. And I also think he is coming off – his second best season, I would say, as a pro, probably where he feels like he established himself again as a top guy. And yet there is still a feeling, Nate, and I don't want to put you in too tough a spot because I know you know him and everything, but I think football Twitter still has a lot of doubts on him, and probably why is because of the style that he plays. And to me, the reason why he doesn't inspire a lot of people is because he plays a very safe style. And you sometimes watch him and you say, make the throw downfield. Don't always just take the check down so quick. I think John Gruden gets frustrated about that. Do you think that's a fair criticism? Is that part of his game? Is that something his coaches have had to deal with him that like he plays a little too close to the vest sometimes?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great, great point. And that's with a lot of them is almost you have to take away his safety valve. You have to just go like, hey, we are throwing this post. I'll just make something up. We are throwing this post. Like, this is why we're throwing it. He's a guy that when he wants to attack, everything has to be perfect. which is not a, it's never going to be perfect in the NFL. It just isn't. You have to throw off platform. You have to throw sidearm. You have to just, you have to take a hit in the chin as you're throwing it. It's not going to be where you sit there like a statue and throw deep. It's just, you don't get those Drew Bledsoe moments anymore, or not as much. The game's changed. And I think for him is that he thinks it has to be perfect to throw those. And so you almost have to take it away from him and go like, hey, we're throwing this and we're throwing this. You got nothing underneath. You got to chuck it. And I think when that happens, he does. I think sometimes when he knows he has the safety valve, he's like, I'm not going to throw this pick. That might get picked off. All right, I'm going to check it down and get 6 yards. Hey, I got 6 yards. But it's like, yeah, that was a fine play. But sometimes where you want the great plays. You want the difference maker plays, those 6 plays a game that win you games. I mean, that's what football really comes down to. It's 60 plays on each side. Really, it comes down to about 10% of the plays really change the game. And I think for him, it's like he thinks he's doing the right thing, but you need to emphasize it. You need to take it away from him, or you need to be kind of blunt with him and go, no, we don't want that. Because he honestly just doesn't think he's doing the wrong thing. And I think that's why he gets frustrated. But I, as a coach and being in those rooms with them, it is frustrating from a coaching perspective, because you're like, we got 8 yards there, but a touchdown's a lot better, isn't it? Like, you know, and again, I just don't think he thinks he's doing the wrong thing, and you have to protect him in a different way. You know, like Deshaun Watson, you protect him by maybe not having him throw so deep and giving him a safety valve and going, hey, check it down. Let's save yourself about 12 hits this game. For him, it's the opposite. It's like, hey, you have no check down, throw deep. Like, make a play. Let's do something. Because he's never going to ad-lib either. That's the other thing that's really frustrating, I think, with Derek. And I get it from a fan's perspective and a coaching perspective sometimes, is he's a pretty good athlete, but he never uses it. He's never going to ad-lib you a play and off-schedule plays. Like, he is a old-school pocket quarterback in an athletic body. So it's kind of he just doesn't have that mindset where he's like, he wants to sit from the pocket and dissect. He thinks that is what it is. He really needs to let it loose and maybe run around and try a 50-50 ball and make a guy make a play, or just ad-lib a play and just, you know, the quasi scramble drills that like Aaron Rodgers does, or a lot of quarterbacks do these days. Mahomes does when he does the I call it the Madden drop back, where he just keeps falling backwards and then makes a play, right. You know, but he's, you know, where you're just holding down on the down stick or on the left stick, just, all right, get away from the rush. Let's throw it. But he has the arm to do right. That's a whole nother story. But Derek doesn't have those ad-lib moments. And that's kind of frustrating.
Where this league is headed now, where our league is headed, is how quarterbacks making moves with their legs and their arm, and this idea that he has that in him to not unlock that. I can imagine why it'd be so frustrating for a coaching staff, whether it was and the coach staff you were on or the current one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, he almost has 100 starts at this point. I mean, we got to get to the point where it is what it is. He is what he is. Hmm. I mean, 100 starts is 100 starts. That's a lot of starts in the NFL. It's not – 2 seasons in, it'd be like, okay, yeah. But I mean, we're on a third offensive staff. He almost has 100 starts now. And I'm not taking away, Derek did have his second best year last year. He did play really well last year. He is what he is. And I think whatever coach is coaching him is going to be frustrated at some of those aspects, and fans for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, and Derek Carr is a good study of the fact that, you know, quarterbacks, we're seeing certain quarterbacks that in year two, they look like they've arrived. They're fully developed. They're changing football. Derek Carr is, you know, he may feel disrespected. He's just lower tier for me on that front. But if you look at this 19 class, and I'm going to let you decide where you think the answer to this is, because I have my own opinions. But we've got guys like Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes, who year two, they just blow up the league. When you look at this cast of characters that were drafted 2 drafts ago, who in your mind can make the jump as soon as week 1, week 2, week 3 this year and become the guy that everyone is talking about?
I mean, the answer is Kyler, but he already kind of showed that. But I actually, looking and reviewing these guys again, I'm becoming a bigger fan every day of Daniel Jones. Which I was with everybody else at that draft last year. We're watching it. And I'm going to preface this. I'm going to cop out a little bit. So I was with the AAF the year before. So I watched none of these guys in college other than some TVs, you know, where I'm just watching.
You were like in the front office, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your title? You were the Atlanta Thrashers?
Atlanta Legends. I wish we were the Thrashers. We actually have
Legends, man.
I still have my purple starter jacket. So, Maybe I'll wear that next time. But so Daniel Jones, though, is like, I just keep watching back. Greg, we talked a couple times about him, but it is, I like him so much more than I did last year. Like when I was like, really, this guy, you know, yeah, he has some talent. I see, I get it. Like I get him as a first rounder. I did see that, but a top 10 pick, no. And now I'm kind of getting it. Like he does a lot of nice things. And I mean, just a couple of notes, like I wrote down just rewatching him. I mean, it's, yeah, first thing I said, it's better than I thought he'd be. But he's tough. I mean, he's like, he goes downfield when there's pressure in his grill. He like, that does not matter. Pressure does not faze him. And we just touched upon a second ago is that's what this league is. You're not going to get the pocket moments or the statue moments anymore. You just don't. You get them like twice a game. Everything is, you have to move. You have to take a hit. You just have to be tough at the quarterback position nowadays. And that's where these big athletic guys are like the Darnolds of the world, the Joneses of the world. This is why these guys are so great. They can take these hits. And I mean, I don't want to say it, like they shouldn't take 20 hits a game, but they could take these full on blitzes because the pressures are so much different these days and so much better these days. But, and just going off of what we said about Derek, Daniel Jones can ad lib. He can do those off platform throws. He can make the funky throws. I just posted a clip of him on a naked where Michael Bennett just came straight at him and he was taking a shot and he threw, and Daniel Jones threw the ball almost like underhand. But he completed it. But those are the throws you have to make. It's not going to be perfect over the top. And, you know, he's a good athlete. I just think the thing with him is he's still learning to anticipate. And, you know, a guy who has a lot of starts, I thought maybe he'd be a little better at that. But I think for him, he's just gauging his own arm, his own talent about what he can get away with. So yeah, I think sometimes
I wonder what's going to happen if he does break out this year and like how people do mental gymnastics not to give Dave Gettleman any credit for it. I'm just wondering how that's going to play out.
Can't keep doing those gymnastics at that point.
It's true. I think I've had this like long gestating, article, which I think might come out this week on this class of 19. And Jones was the guy who surprised me the most just in terms of the style that he was, because he's a hard guy to compare anyone to. To me, it seems like he's athletic Eli, which maybe it's like too easy. Because he was like he was a Giants quarterback, but he's like athletic Eli.
And he looks exactly the same.
Right. But he doesn't have a big arm. He does not have a big arm. For an NFL starter, he's probably got less than average. But he is not afraid to make a throw. And he was the guy that just had way more wow factor of all the rookies from last year than I ever expected. I thought he had more just like, holy cow, plays in the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season than any of the rookies or even like the class of 18 type of guys. Now, he made a ton of mistakes too, and he was under a lot of pressure. I think he had the second highest rate of pressure, and Darnold was the highest in terms of like they had the worst offensive lines in terms of pressure. But the thing I was impressed with is like, unlike Carr, like you mentioned, he did create a lot. He made a lot of big plays, and you hope it's a little easier to coach the aggressiveness out of him. Another comparison to me could be, you know, a young Jameis Winston or a Ryan Fitzpatrick, but a bigger, stronger, more athletic Fitzpatrick. And those guys kind of never turned down that aggressiveness, you know, for better or worse. You know, Fitzpatrick is a fun guy to watch, but he's been up and down. Jameis Winston never really turned it down. But man, if Jones is as smart as everyone, you know, seems to be in terms of eventually he's going to pick things up, you would expect that to get better in year two, three, four. And I thought like, okay, maybe he's not going to be a top five guy, but he kind of looked like he could be a borderline top 10 type of guy. And like, look, that's what you want. You know, like that's a lot better than everyone I think expected when he was coming out.
Let me ask you about somebody else. Because this is somebody that second round pick, and I got Broncos Twitter after me for months now. I'm not as sold on Drew Lock based on what we saw in the end of the season. I know he did some good things, but the fact that John Elway thinks he found his guy moving forward seems a little bit presumptuous to me. What have you seen from Drew Lock?
And so it's going off what Greg just said about Jones being so smart and everything. They ran a real offense with him last year. And I'm going to dovetail this with my Lock. What I'm going to talk about Lock is they ran an actual offense. He was making checks, kills. He's doing protection stuff. It looked like a guy in year two as opposed to year one. It did mentally. Now we talk about Lock. Lock seemed like day one rookie install. especially the Chargers game, his first start, which I totally get. It's his first start. Okay, I get it. I could see the coaches just going, hey, let's take the load off of him. Let's make it easy on him. Let's just get his feet wet a little bit. You would just hope, you know, I get it. He was hurt. He missed, you know, the first half of the year and probably didn't get a lot of reps. But you would hope a guy with so many starts in college would maybe have a little more aptitude for a playbook at that point. But that's what it was. And that's what I have to figure out with Locke. So my answer is TBD. But
he was always looking at his wristband. Like there was a lot of like,
well, you would be too, Greg. I mean,
no,
like,
I know.
Throwing you out there and like, you know, late November.
But he made, don't you think, even though like there was kind of basic and he was out, there was a lot of confusion. He did make plays.
He did. And that's the thing with him is he has that willingness to make a play, which again is that is a huge trait. It really is, guys. That and being tough as a quarterback are huge traits. Willingness to take a risk. It really is. You don't want the guy to throw five picks because okay, that might be great, but that also must mean he might be not throwing it 10 times down the field like when you want him to. But with Locke, it's one of those things. Yeah, like you said, you're looking at his wrist a lot. The plays that you can tell he's run before, the spacings, the curl flat, Hank, also known as. Good. He's actually progressing. He's going 1-2. Good, good. Every week in the NFL, your game plan is going to be very opponent-based. You know, it's going to change every week. There's going to be certain adjustments you have to make every week. Those are the plays he struggled with. I think for those plays, he was like, okay, I'm sorry, I'm fixing my hair. I hate looking at myself. So it's one of those things where I just took that shower, Greg. And it's one of those.
He's like, do I need to like get showered for this? It's on video.
Well,
like,
trust me, you don't.
I was like, it doesn't matter.
I wore a Mariner shirt. It's not even a shot, so that was useless. Yeah, I know. I was like trying to give a shout out. Like, yeah, whatever. But you know, with Locke, with some of that stuff, it was just like. If it was a new play, you can tell it was a new play because he is looking not where he's supposed to be looking. He is like totally wrong side of the field. Like, and it's like stuff like, I'm not saying like I know everything what's going on. I'm not in those meeting rooms, but you can tell. And it's one of those things. That's what we have to figure out. Is it the chicken or the egg? Is it the coaching staff making it easy on him, or is it him being a slow learner? And I know nothing about Drew Locke, so I do not want to say he's dumb or anything. But he does do those. He does have some wow moments, but it is one of those things. I have to. He's TBD. I mean, we just don't have enough on him at this point, and I hate copping out like that. Great first appearance, Nate.
Killed it. Finally, Nate, what would your thoughts be on Dwayne Haskins? Where do you stand on him by the end of this season, assuming there is a season? Do you believe the Washington Football Club will feel like they have their entrenched franchise guy, or will the new Rivera in Washington include finding a new quarterback?
I'm not as high on him as maybe as Locke a little bit. Haskins isn't a great athlete. And you know, he has some footwork stuff that really throws me off. He makes it work. Like he'll just, it looks like his feet go dead right before he's about to throw it. Like all of a sudden it's just like, he just stops moving his feet and throws it like this. And it's like, oh, okay. That came out of nowhere. He needs, again, I mean, honestly, we can cut and paste, copy and paste.
Wait, is that good or bad? Is that good?
I don't know. It leads to inconsistency. So some guys make it work. Like Mahomes doesn't have great feet. He has unbelievable flexibility and can create torque from angles. But you can't coach that. You know, it's not – I'm not going to go, hey, watch Mahomes. Okay, now you do that, says some high schooler. You know, but I wouldn't show Haskins because I would be like, no, I don't want you to do that either because his feet just kind of go dead. And he's like, eh. And the ball goes out and it works, but whatever. But again, I copy and paste some of the Locke talk is that he needs more reps. He came out as a sophomore. He doesn't have a lot of starts. That offense from Ohio State is extremely QB friendly passing game wise. That's why the receivers get to put a lot on them in that offense, in those Urban Meyer offenses. They have a lot of adjustments, a lot of reads. The interception you saw Justin Fields throw in the playoffs, it's because he was waiting to see what adjustment the receiver made. And then the adjustment that receiver second guessed himself and bailed out of it. And then that's why that interception happened in that playoff game. So that's why you see some of those Ohio State receivers take a big leap in the NFL. Because it's kind of easy when now I don't have to adjust. I can just, I just run a 14-yard curl route. Cool. I don't have to like read cover two and read this. Oh, that's easy. You know, and I think But the quarterback, on the flip side of that, is the quarterback doesn't has a lot that they don't have to worry about. It's just, hey, we have a really good player. Let him get open. You know, that's I'm totally like just putting it in a box. There's more to it, but that's why he doesn't have a lot of real quote unquote reps. And so he had the starts last year in a turmoil situation. So this year's basically going to be his rookie year all over again. And I think I'm high on Scott Turner. I think he is going to do a nice job. And they have an X receiver in Scary Terry. So, it, you know, I think he's going to have some pieces, but he needs some stuff.
He's learning a new offense. I think that's totally been under offense. An undersold thing with Locke, too, and with Daniel Jones, thinking about this rookie class. It's like, is Pat Shurmur really going to come in there and, like, give Drew Locke a schematic advantage? Probably not. So that's a guy, at best, you're hoping.
Wow.
Well, I'm just saying.
I think that's fair on Pat Shurmur.
I mean, you're just hoping that he's – I think Pat Shurmur at this point, you're hoping he's a solid coach, but he's not going to be like, hey, this is the guy that suddenly just turns you great. He's just going to be – you're hoping it's middle of the road, but it's a new coach. Jones has Jason Garrett. Scott Turner, you know, with Washington, the one thing, like, Haskins didn't show as much early. And so then you worry about the numbers. Like, Locke did some things where it's like he avoided sacks really well. He avoided negative plays. He made some plays. Whereas Haskins, like, you didn't see. I know it's a little all over the place, but when you talked about Haskins coming from that offense, it actually makes me think of Kyler Murray a little bit. And I know PFF got like a little grief that they ranked Kyler Murray 29th going into this season, and they didn't really have him very high last year in terms of how he played. Despite the numbers, they actually had him significantly lower than like Daniel Jones, and was kind of in the area of Locke. He's a tough guy to evaluate sometimes too, because like the skill set's there. It's obvious he's so athletic and his arm is so good. But when you watch that offense last year, you know, there's a, like, that's like watching a college offense in some way, that like most of the time it was just get rid of the ball, a 5-yard throw in the first few seconds, and that was it. And you could go a few games where Kyler Murray wasn't really doing a lot more than that, which is why I think PFF probably graded him low, which it feels unfair, but like, do you think there's any warrant to like some concern about that when it comes to Kyler Murray?
Not really. I mean, Kyler makes everyone better. That was not a talented roster last year. And he made him look, he made him competitive every single game. And the thing with Kyler is, not only is he an unbelievable athlete and throws one of the prettiest deep balls in the league already and can make all three level throws, is that he knows what he is. He's the best slider in the league right now. He knows how to get down quick. I know that's such a random trait to have, but he is. I mean, the baseball background comes into play. He knows how to not take a hit, which is a huge skill too for his body type. He can, that's very, a huge thing for him. With that offense though, it really impressed me with Cliff, because I'm not going to lie. I'm younger, but I still have some of that older NFL mindset. Like, I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing. You get a guru every year. So I've seen so many gurus, quote unquote, burn out after 18 months. And then you never hear from them again. I mean, you guys know that too. And with Cliff, what really impressed me was he's not just an air raid coach. He's a very creative coach. He is willing to adapt, which was, I thought, give him a lot more credibility than I was going into the year. I thought no matter what, he was going to stick with 10 and 11 personnel and just try and just beat his head against the wall by passing the ball 6-7 yards, like you were just saying. But they played New Orleans. They got blitzed out on every third down because they had to throw hot. The New Orleans defense figured out their whole third down package. They couldn't every single throw out, they had to throw hot. It was 3rd and 10. They were getting 5 yards done. They're off the field. Saints just ran them out of the building. But what happened after that? They adjusted. And I think with Cliff, I know we're talking about Kyler, but Cliff is he's creative enough to know what he has. They went from a 10 personnel team to a 12 and 13 personnel team. They were in wing sets with two tight ends at the end of the year. Like the last 6 weeks, that's all they were running. Not all they're running, but that was a big chunk of what they were running. He was like, this is what's working. This is what we are. They became a really good run team. And it's just, that impressed me a lot with Cliff. And then that's going to, maybe Kyler is with the perfect guy. Like Lamar's with Greg Roman. Perfect. We're good. Breeze is with Sean Payton. We're good. Like just that perfect match of coach, scheme, and player. And I think Kyler's in that perfect situation. He's just a one-of-one guy. You need a coach that knows how to work with him. You just, it's just like Mahomes. It's not teaching tape. Like, he just does his own thing, and then you just hopefully control it. That's good organized chaos.
Nate Tice, you've said it all. Thought it's so much. Derek Carr, you know, is Nate going to get a call or a text from Derek? Maybe. It's possible at this point.
Probably not. But
the second year guys, I feel like we're more enlightened because of Nate. And check him out again on Twitter, at Nate_Tice, where he's chopping up the film and with a lot of good insight, as you can hear. And we'd love to have you on again sometime, Nate. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. That was awesome.
There he goes. We'll get that Tiffany song for you next time.
You know, the shower was worth it, really.
I mean, he had to take it anyway. At some point, he had to take it.
You should.
I mean, I have done a few of these shows without taking a shower. Have you not? From the beginning of Corona until now, I don't mean like waltzing into the studio in years past, but been unshowered once or twice.
I don't think it's the same. As long as, like, have you done it after one of your nude workouts in the backyard? Like, do you go straight from a beach body workout to the show, or is there a shower in between those?
That has not occurred, nor that's not really like a strategy that I'm like hoping to to bring to the show either. Anyways.
All right. That was good. Sorry, we, you know, ran a little short on time there. We'd love to get some Minshew commentary.
I had a Minshew question, but, you know, I'll save it for the second time that we meet him.
The Minshew does get kind of forgotten in this rookie talks.
Not by me.
Since he had like better numbers than basically everyone.
he exceeded almost what every other rookie from that class did.
I'm with you.
An sticking unforgettable.
With it. Well, it's dismissed.
An unforgettable
it's just
season
totally dismissed.
For the
it's like,
2019
oh, you know.
Jaguars.
It's not
what
dismissed.
A year it was in Jackson.
We know he was good. We haven't had a lot of D. Jones stock. He deserved it, you know. Poor Danny does.
Before we go, you know, at the top of Monday's show, Greg, I was happy you did too. You had pointed out that Canada represents a pretty solid level of listenership.
Number
for
three.
Us.
Number three. UK is a strong three. Two. To be fair, it's a pretty big gap, but Canada's a strong three.
Right. And then, again, these colors don't run. I got a little excited, started talking about the old US of A, and I, you know, it left me with a bad taste in my mouth because I love Canada too. So I just wanted to, at the end of the show, share the top 10 things that I love about Canada.
Okay.
If that's okay with you guys.
Please.
Number 10, the national anthem. It's a nice little bop, as the kids
Solid
say.
One.
I mean, if that's 10, you know this is going to be a good list.
Number 9. Everything about the Sky Dome. The fact that it was the first retractable roof. The fact that there's a hotel in center field where people can do it during a game. Joe Carter. WrestleMania 6. Hogan versus Warrior. And the 89 opening festivities on YouTube. Check it out. Number 8. That one Tragically Hip CD I own. Nice. What was that, Mark?
I don't know. We're only at number 8. I mean, like, let's... That was a long,
Seven.
Beefy number. That was a beefy number 9.
Shut up. 7. Interesting political leaders. Rob Ford. You know, that guy was nuts. The hunk prime minister that looks like Handsome Hank. Nice. 6. Drake. Drake's good. I like Drake. 5. The kids in the hall. 4. John Candy. Rest in peace. Buried right here in Culver City. 3. Bill Hartman. Also gone too soon. The greatest SNL cast member ever. Number 2, Vancouver. I've never been there, but everyone says it's really clean.
It's a great city. Okay.
And the number one thing that I love about Canada, that one part of the Bare Naked Lady song, One Week, where they go, "It's Banana."
That's number one.
One of their best bands.
I mean, you could argue...
It's Banana!
You could argue, like, Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken, is even more iconic than
Not even close to me. Maybe to you, and I respect that if that's your call, but to me, it's Banana! It's better than anything.
I literally almost went on a Bare Naked Ladies cruise many years back. That was my favorite band for a while. And let me say, the two of you, this whole campaign, I get it. Pick a country, and then all these.
Where's your Estonia countdown?
Well,
Sessler?
No, I'm not letting you onto Estonia corner. I am going to present my top 10 Estonian elements on Friday's show.
I had no strategy. Okay, I was just surprised.
Nonsense. I do love Canada. Let's get entire Canada on my side. And my brother, get a bunch of tweets.
My brother went to McGill. I made a number of trips. Great place to visit, especially when you're in high school and your brother's in college. Forget about it. Montreal is just an amazing place. Rufus Wainwright, Laurent Duvernay Tardif. I mean,
Michael J. Fox, Canadian.
Like the French Canadian Jews are a special breed that I'm a big fan of.
How many times has Greg mentioned Canada in the 10 years that we've known him? Before this week.
This is the first time this week.
I've actually mentioned McGill on the podcast as a listener, reminding me way too often.
You've mentioned McGill.
Way too often.
You've mentioned McGill, but beyond, I would just say something feels, something's in the air, and I sense it, and I trust my intuitions when these things bubble up like this.
How come it can't just be a nice thing? How come there was no thought?
Because I don't trust just nice things coming from anyone on this show. That's not how this works.
I don't come up with a strategy.
Erica, can you jump in a second?
Before the show of like what we're
going to
talk
about.
Erica
knows exactly what I'm talking about.
This is a mess.
Do you know what? I think you look great. What is Mark talking about? That came from a genuine place. It really did.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a third party.
Yes, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I love Canada. Canada's great. First of all,
it happens 3 days after I become a Toronto Blue Jays fan. Okay, like outshining
that.
There are things that I really like about Canada, but I don't need to like waltz around telling 10,000 people about it. It's in my heart, and so my love for Canada. I don't need to announce.
There's a good quote. It's like you often betray yourself about what you notice in others. So you noticing that like you think we're scheming to make a move before the show. It's
absolutely
it's a little troubling. It's a little
no.
Troubling.
It's actually deadly accurate.
Whoa.
Anyway, I like Canada, and I'm glad that I got that list out there. And I'm looking forward to the Estonia list from Mark.
Oh, it's going to be coming from a sincere place. It is sincere.
The only reason was because we're changing. They're getting rid of our publishing platform. So I was getting some of those numbers before it's all gone. Cause I'm always thinking we might need these numbers someday. I'm going to go download all these numbers. And then I saw about Canada, and I was like, about Canada. Pretty good job.
Greg, you fascinate me. Like, the things that you care about and don't care about, I would have guessed you would have been the last person that was like, I need to get to our metrics platform to download all the data before it gets wiped. I would have never thought that you would be about that life.
Here's why, because we get millions of downloads every month, and people need to know. And who knows? We might be in a spot where we're going to need that data because the NFL is like, see you guys later. Have that in our back pocket.
How about our PR department get on board here and publicize some of this stuff? I see this podcast got 20,000 listeners last month. Like, excuse me, I've got a story you could tell if you wanted to.
Do we have a PR or is that like a me thing?
We have a
NFL Media has a PR. Andrew Howard does a great job setting up our radio interviews sometimes and helping us out. He got Baldy for us. He got some of our guests,
Andrew Howard's a great man and a good Philadelphia sports fan. I think we work for a small boutique here, and you can't expect there to be a PR arm that supports us. You just can't expect that publicity.
Too much to ask. Fair.
All right. Well, that was good. We'll be back on Friday with another show. And sincerely, Mark, I am looking forward to your Estonia countdown.
I didn't realize the Blue Jays thing is why.
Well, the Blue Jays thing is not the heart and soul of this. We don't need to dig back into it. I have learned at age 46 to trust my intuition. Which rarely fails me. And so I could be wrong, but I'm not going to convince myself I'm wrong. I'm sticking to this.
Well, the good thing about intuition is you never find out wrong because it's, that's up to you.
Each show is its own planet. We're leaving this planet. None of these hard feelings will exist on Friday. We'll see you then.
Now there's hard feelings, Bob.
Yeah, there's well, hard no, feelings.
You're really giving yourself away.
You seem offended by my intuition, which is like precise and dead on. So
we gotta end
the
show.
What to do about that? Get out of here.
Man, the end of these shows are going wild lately. All right, signing off for the whole gang.
Your time.
Love you guys. Till Friday. We'll be right back.